everybody, it's James here, and it's Ask Dutch Anything. And we're going to do the very quick version of the plugs. There is Dutch there. I don't think the camera's going to switch unless he talks, though, because we're still recording this through Zoom rather than the usual way of doing it. He has hats, he has books, he has diplomas. You can get them all signed at dirtydutchmantel@gmail.com. That's with two L's. Dutch, you're going to have to speak so the camera's on you.
Oh, so the camera's on me? You changed this whole system on me.
I know.
Now I don't even know what to expect. This is harassment. I know what this is. So when you get a suit from my lawyer, P.J. Newsom, what's Cornette's manager's name?
P. New.
P.J. New or whatever his name is. Hey, we're suing you, buddy, because you're making us both look bad with this new system. But anyway,
you're too cheap to pay the shipping to send a subpoena.
No, I'm not. I will. I'm used to sending stuff to the UK because I send a lot of my books to UK. It's expensive, so people be aware and beware. In UK, I'm not in charge of the shipping rates, but it is. Ridiculous.
It's outrageous.
And I'm thinking about I don't know where they get these fees. Now wait a minute, I was going to ask you, UK is no longer in with the European group, right? What was that?
No. Yeah. We left.
Did that help or hurt?
I think it hurt. It's one of those things where it's just better the devil you know, I think. And I think that's pretty much been borne out. So everything's just more expensive and slower.
But I think the pride interfered there.
The populist movement took over on that one. So it was 51% to 49% to leave, I think it was. Anyway, people have told us off, right? Do you remember when we jokingly said a couple of weeks ago, let's start a political podcast? And everybody wrote and said, please, dear God, don't do it. So we're not going to do it. We're going to just do wrestling because that's what people expect. Well, it's what people hope to expect from us, I guess, on this show. And that's what we're going to do. And this is your questions, everybody. Fan questions that you emailed to questionsfordutch@gmail.com. That is questionsfordutch@gmail.com. And all of you on my script in front of me have done just that indeed. And the first person who wrote in is Max Harris. And he said, I found a lump on my head a few months ago that I thought was a tumor. It turned out fine, but it gave me a mortality check at 32. I dropped a ton of weight and worked out constantly. The one thing I'm struggling with is smoking cigarettes. I've done so since I was 15. Can Dutch, in his dirtiest of ways, go back 20 years in his mind and cut a promo on my ass to make me quit that I can play when I reach for my pack?
What's his name?
Max. Max Harris.
Max Harris, listen, don't smoke, brother, please. Didn't you hear our last podcast when we talked about wrestlers used to going out into the arena and everybody was smoking? You could not breathe. And I'm thinking, hell, I'm going to be the one to die damn secondhand smoke. I'm going to get lung cancer. So stop smoking, man. It won't do you any good. Now, I know I sit out here with a cigar. But a cigar, I've never seen anybody inhale a cigar. Somebody said, have you ever inhaled it? I said, you're not supposed to inhale it. I don't think you could inhale a cigar. That's just to smoke around something and hold something in your hand. It's more or less for idiots like me. But you know what a carton of cigarettes is now?
I think over here it's like £11 for like 20. It's really expensive. So
how much is that in dollars?
Like 14 or something.
$14
for like 20.
I think it's 80 here or 50, something like
50.
$50 for a carton.
No,
yes. You call me
no, like just for a pack of 20, just 20 cigarettes.
No, in a carton.
Oh, well, how many do you get in one of them?
I think you get 10 packs, I think.
So what? So 200 for $50. We get 20 for the equivalent of about $14.
So you're counting the cigarettes.
Oh, yeah, the cigarette, yeah.
I'm counting the packs. Mm. So 20 in a pack. So anyway, so Max, listen, before you die, and you will, you're going to have a lot of trouble from those, from that cigarette smoking. And there's people that get lung cancer that has never smoked before. I thought it was going to be me. So I'm just giving you some damn, get off your fat arse and put the cigarettes down. And actually the money that you spend on cigarettes, put it in a savings account for your child. Because it will mount up fast, believe me.
Or porn. Buy porn with it. It's better for you.
I didn't cuss you out, Max, but I'm just giving you some advice. Stop the cigarettes.
Fine advice. Next question. George Carl says, I would like to know about a match. I'm sorry, I had to rewrite this. I couldn't copy and paste it because my stupid laptop had Microsoft Word on it. He saw on a 24-hour wrestling channel called Plex, this is George Carl, and he says, it was Puerto Rico, and you were involved in a 5-on-5 tag match inside a cage. Whoever got the opposition all handcuffed first got to beat them for 5 minutes.
Yep.
What do you remember about this match and who the teams were?
Actually, I saw this match not too long ago. It was me, Carlos Colon, my friend Invader, he was in on it, Bruiser Brody, and I can't remember who the other guy was. We were against Abdullah the Butcher, Cheeky Star. Oh, my friend, Iron Cheeky, he was in it. And it was in two cages. And we had two rings, two cages, but they were like, you know, you could go, you didn't have a cage between one ring and the other.
It's like war games kind of thing.
Yeah, and they put that together, and we had a match with handcuffs hanging from all over the cage, corners and all. And the object was to handcuff your opponents to the, get them handcuffed. So when you got them all handcuffed, then say if one guy was left, he gets the key and he lets his partners out. And then you get full rein on them for 5 minutes. So it's one of those crazy Puerto Rican matches that went 15 minutes. It didn't have any many high spots. So take it for what it was. That's what they do. It was actually seeing the two rings together inside the cage was actually better than the match. So if you want to watch it, you can watch it. But I'm glad that we won because I didn't want to be handcuffed and them guys beating the crap out of me because if they hit me hard, what am I going to do? I'm still handcuffed. So we got through that.
What were the weirdest, aside from that, what were the weirdest like stipulations in Puerto Rico that we may not even see anymore?
They had a match one time, and it's called, they got it out of Japan. Japan, some of those groups over there, they had these wild-ass matches. And so Puerto Rico, that's just right down their alley. They wanted to have a match and light the ropes on fire. And they wanted me to be in the match. I said, not no. And I was the booker. It was Carlos's idea. I said, not no, but hell no. I'm not doing it. So, but I had my good buddy there, Eddie Gilbert, who volunteered to do it. I said, Eddie, you want to do this match? I'll do it. I'll do it. And he did it. And it wasn't bad. But what they did, they took and put the ropes around, but took the rubber off, and it was just straight cable. Then they took towels and soaked them in, not gasoline, kerosene, I guess. And they wrapped it around the ropes. And the guy had a big torch in there, and he do, do, do. And it was probably, there was three on each side, 9 on each side, because 3 on each rope. So we had 4 times 9 is what, 36? What is it?
Yeah.
They had 36 little towels on fire in there and a pretty big flame. So I'm sitting in the dugout me, I'm big chicken shit anyway. Needles and fire scare me. So I don't want to be anywhere around it. So, and Eddie had this match, and it was more smoke than anything. I mean, how are you going to get... I thought Eddie got burned one time because he went up against it, but he didn't. He was just hitting off. But they had a decent match, so I was just glad that I wasn't in it. And you see me as hairy as I am going in there. I just go up and I just a flash, and then it's over. But that was
a wrestler melted today in Puerto Rico. So fun.
And they had some other crazy matches. I can't recall right off the top of my head right now, but they canceled that afterwards. After I left, they didn't have it anymore.
Maybe Carlos should have put a sign up saying, yes, said, "If you sit in this arena."
Yes. Then... No, he should. He should have had that in the dressing room. If you go to, he should have had that for the wrestlers. He said, "Okay, if you get in the ring and you get hurt because of the crazy shit that we do, hey, don't blame us. You agreed to get in there." So.
Next one, Luke says, I was just wondering, who do you guys think had the opportunity to be a major player in the world of wrestling, but for one reason or another, it never amounted to anything? I've got my own thoughts on it, and that is Monty Brown.
Who is this?
Luke says this.
Luke, you're full of shit. That's your opinion, and everybody's got one. No, I do agree with you, Monty Brown. Should have been a bigger star than what he was, because not only could he was a former football player and played for two or three NFL teams. I think he played for two teams, and he was in the league for about, I think, 3 or 4 years. Great, great athlete and very good on the mic. So he knew what he wanted to do, and I think if he'd and he went to WWF, I guess, but he just they put some kind of gimmick on him that didn't fit him. If they just let him be Monty Brown, he'd have been fine.
But well, they shoved him in the ECW, the WWE ECW thing, and then after a few months, there was a family situation. I think maybe his sister died and he went to go look after her kids, yep, or something like that, and just left the business, and that was that.
I do know that it was something with his sister, and he went up there, and good for him, because you had kids involved that needed guidance. They needed support. They needed somebody to, you know, to feed them, to get them a place to live. So he went up there, and I'll say that that's a good deed on his part. They weren't his kids, it was his sister's kids, but he still related to them. So, and I don't think he was happy in WWE anyway, because it didn't do anything with him. I mean, when he was with that ECW offshoot, I could have told him right then, no, they didn't. See, they had ECW doing the thing that the center in Orlando does now, the Performance Center. They had actual territories trying to train these guys, but they had no control over what they were learning. At least in the Performance Center, they have control over what they're learning. But to me, this is it. I think if you go to Performance Center, if you haven't advanced enough in a year to bring you up, you need to give it up. I think it don't take you that long to learn it. It just, but for them to go up, you know what that means? That means somebody has to leave. And they just keep the status quo. And if the people will continue, and they don't pay them hardly anything. And I think they pay them. I used to pay them $500 a week. It may have gone up now. But $500, then you got to go. This is it. This is what I got against the Performance Center. It's a training school. I got that. But to go in there and take bumps every day in front of just the other guys, it gets boring as hell, plus it hurts more. Now, if you're in front of a crowd, you get the adrenaline from the crowd. You don't feel the bumps. I mean, you feel them later, but But if nobody's cheering you on, nobody's getting excited, nobody's doing nothing, and they say, oh, well, let's take some bumps, guys. You start paying attention to them. And let's face it, you only got so many bumps in you anyway. So if you're in a situation and you're not making any money anyway, go out and try something else, or go to another organization, or do something. But what they do, they put them on the 3-year contracts, and they can't get out, I guess. I mean, if I was on a contract and I wanted to leave, and even if I went in there and told them I wanted to finish up or something, and they said, no, you can't do that. I said, well, watch me. And you know what I'd do? My little ass would just do a no-show. And I said, keep your money. I'm going to go here and work this construction job so I can eat. So now, years ago, they could keep you. They didn't pay anything. They didn't guarantee anything. You ever heard about those contracts?
Yep. 10 dates for $150 a shot. Oh, you're guaranteed $1,500 a year.
That's it. And then if you wanted to leave, they would tell you, well, we got you under contract. By that time, you were so broke, you couldn't even hire a lawyer to fight it. You'd have to go get a pro bono lawyer to. And they had the upper hand, and they knew they had the upper hand. So, and they ran it like a. I'm gonna send you a picture to Vince, of Vince, and you'll know exactly what the picture is when you see it and what I'm talking about. They ran it like it's my way or the highway. But even when you took the highway, they'd still want to mess with you. And that was Vince not getting shown up.
So one of the few people that Vince actually sort of didn't screw over contractually wise was Monty Brown, as we discussed before. We were talking off air before we started recording this about another name that you said has even more potential that's not been realized as of yet, that you wanted to nominate.
Well, I'm thinking about a couple that should have been bigger stars. Brad Armstrong is one. Now, he wasn't a big guy, but man, he could do everything except talk. But they could have put somebody with him. But in the ring, he was tremendous. Here's another guy that just left NWA. If there is, I guess there's some. Billy Corgan has it, is Nick Aldis. I think Nick Aldis, he has the size, he has the look, and he has everything to be a world champion. I don't think the world champion needs to be the greatest worker. He just has to have good timing. And basically, this dude, Harley Race wasn't the greatest worker. You know, Nick Bockwinkel wasn't the greatest worker. A lot of guys. Harley Race wasn't either, but they could perform and they could work with anybody. I think Nick Aldis could do that. And when he dresses up, he does look like he's worth something. Good talker. I like him.
I'm going to give you one. And that I know you won't have.
There's one more. Dutch Mantel.
Of course.
I don't think they used him to maybe 20% of his potential. I just wanted to bring that up.
I think Paul Burchill's one. And I know you don't, you never worked with Paul Burchill, but I thought just WWE, when he finally got there, they absolutely crapped the bed on him. Because, I mean, he had, you know, a good size to him. He could do standing shooting style presses. You know, he was a very impressive athlete. And they gave him a pirate character, and then they gave him a sister who, in storyline, he was sleeping with. And then he just disappeared from wrestling altogether pretty much after that. So,
you know, I don't think you've ever heard this, but I think he had a beef with Burchill. And why would he put him? He knew he was killing him when he gave it to him. Vince, this is a Vince idea.
Oh God! Yeah.
And the incest idea is, that sounds like classic Vince McMahon. and he will kill that character off in 2 weeks.
He tried to do an incest character angle with Stephanie, where she was bearing his child, apparently. And everybody cut it off before it could ever make it to TV. But he wanted to do it. I mean, this is just one weird Vince McMahon fantasy that he's sort of putting out on TV.
But if he wanted to do that on, what were they on, USA by in those days?
Oh, USA, whatever you're on, yeah.
They wouldn't have let him do that. They would have cut him off. Don't even try it on Fox. Because at least some of the TV stations have retained a bit of morality, and that couldn't happen. But you can't say that that didn't come directly from Vince himself. Because like I'm saying, if he has a bitch for him, he don't have to get rid of him. They get rid of themselves, because then it becomes embarrassing for them to show up. It's terrible. It really is.
Next question. Carl W., my question is, in your mind, who do you feel is the best in-ring performer that you have ever been in the ring with?
Oh, a lot of them are great. See, a great in-ring performer is only as great as the guy he's with, because you're working in tandem. You see, after making a 300-mile trip one way, and I get in a ring with this great ring technician, guess what? I'm not much in a mood to go out there and do it with him. I don't want to dance. I just want to go through the motions and give the fans a decent match. But after they wear your butt out on the travel, and the guy's tired too, and that's when you get hurt, when both of you are tired. But there's been a lot of great ring technicians. I bet you've never heard of this guy, James. Dickie Steinburn. You ever heard of him?
I don't think so, no. No.
Tremendous. And this is back in... It was back before I even got in the business. But that guy could do it all. And the reason he wasn't a bigger star was because of this. He had a big mouth. And he kept telling the promoters what to do. And it may have been a good idea. They didn't want to hear it from any of the talent. Not the one they didn't hire to actually help them out. Some of the great old-time workers years ago, Jody Hamilton, you've heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, of course, the Briscoes. I'm thinking of Eddie Graham. Remember him? Now this is years ago. I'm going to have to bring this forward a little bit, but there's been a lot of in-ring workers that were really good. Here's one that I don't think he hurt himself more than anything else. Brian Pillman. He could really, really go. People liked him, former pro football player, but Brian had demons. And they couldn't depend on him, because when he was doing, you know, the drugs, they couldn't depend on him to show up. So if that's a concern that the booker has, he's not going to do much with you. And I think they tried to do some stuff with him, but I think he kind of was his own worst enemy. Now, if you're talking about the greatest workers of all time, that's just an opinion.
No, specifically that you got in the ring with, though, because you actually laid hands on and just thought, okay, Wow, this guy's fantastic.
Well, I think a lot of it doesn't depend on how much the guy can do. It's his timing. And nobody had better timing than Lawler. He knew what to do, when to do it, how long to do it, when to get out of it. And I don't think he was taught that. He just kind of learned it. And I don't know who would have taught it to him. But he was over so much. Eventually, he learns by trial and error. But he has great timing. He doesn't do a lot of flashy stuff. But what he does do has meaning, and the fans react to it. And you can't stay on top in a territory and draw big money over a 20-year period unless you're over. And he was over in Memphis.
Next question is from Fender. Hi, guys. Dutch, what do you remember of Mick Foley's fallout with Vince McMahon over commentary that saw him defect over to TNA back in 2008? Did the notably sensitive hardcore legend ever talk about his disgust with Vince and the WWE way of running things? And also, what did he think of his matches in TNA? And do you think he should have stuck to commentary or an on-camera non-wrestling role? Or was he getting too much to be... Was he just getting paid too much to do anything but wrestle?
Damn, that's a long question.
Okay, well, let's break it out into two things then. So when Mick came to TNA first, did he talk about just how upset he was with Vince?
Yeah, he talked about it. And after you reminded me, I remember the story he told. But there's a second part to the story. Vince was world famous for really, just berating and abusing the commentators. He'd be screaming in their ear while they were talking. And he would throw a lot of them off. So if they're not putting the proper emphasis or didn't say this or didn't say that, God damn it, what the... I've stood by the gorilla position and heard him just scream at him. But he never screamed at Lawler. Never. He never screamed at Lawler. He took it all out on Michael Cole. Because I asked Lawler one day, I said, did he ever scream at you or does he ever? He said, no. He didn't scream at me.
What about Bradshaw?
I don't think he didn't scream at Bradshaw. But with Mick, I don't know if Mick was going in business for himself or whatever, but Mick, and I will applaud him for this, he wasn't in the mood to be berated after all he'd done in wrestling, and he goes out there to be a commentator, which would, I don't think he added that much to him, but you can only listen to Mick Foley for so long, I think. But he didn't add to it like Lawler did, or even Bradshaw. They were color guys, and they would say, that'd be smart assed. But see, he didn't want to be a smart ass. He was a baby face. He was a good guy. And when he would describe something, I don't know what happened. I wasn't there. But he thought it was insulting, and it was, for Vince to be screaming at him like hell he just started the business yesterday. After all, I would have said the same thing. If I was Mick Foley, and I would think, after all the money I drew here and you're going to get on me for that, you can kiss my butt and get up and leave. And that's exactly what he did. So when TNA got him, that was a big deal for them to get him. But we put him there and didn't really have an idea of what to put him in, tell you the truth. I don't even remember him. Did he do commentary there too?
I don't think he did commentary because Taz had come over by that time. So I think it was Taz on commentary. And Mick just seemed to be, because I was dipping in and out at that time. I remember him wrestling quite a few matches on pay-per-view. And I hate to say this, far past his prime, but I'm sure he'll say the same thing as well. And he wasn't really in shape apart from maybe one of the lockdown pay-per-views where he really put the effort in and everything.
Well, that's what happens when a guy that's drawn big money tries to stay in wrestling when his best days are behind him. And he's actually putting his health at risk too, because his body cannot keep up with what he used to do. I saw a movie one time about a boxer, and he had finished up. He couldn't box anymore. And he ends up doing kids' birthday parties and stuff like that. Just embarrassing stuff. I think a lot of wrestlers go through that, because back in those days, they didn't even have the independence that you could pick up every now and then with a good payday. They didn't even have that. Because that was another process that was evolving, the independent wrestling scene. And it finally found its footing, and they kind of built that up. But I don't think Mick said a lot about it. But I would go into the room and he'd be talking about Vince and laughing and, you know, people wanting to know. And but he didn't give Vince any slack. He really didn't. And sometimes, even when he was working there, I would see tweets by him which were contrary to what the company was believing in. I don't know what it was, but he was anti-WWF for a long time. Or E2.
Yeah. F-E-E-F-G. Right, we'll move on. Barry says, love the show. Do you have any more wrestling, Mr. Wrestling 2 stories? I've read the ones on your website. I'm just wondering if you knew of or heard of any more, good or bad. So we were talking off air again. We established that you had wrestled in, well, quite a few times, and I believe the quote was from the previous clip, a butthole. Yeah. Wouldn't give you, you know, wouldn't give you anything, and it was just difficult to deal with. But there are other stories about him being a butthole as well.
Yeah, well, the guy who gave me the advice about how to handle Johnny Walker. I always thought Johnny Walker was a licker, Johnny Walker. But he told me, and I didn't know it at the time, but the great Mephisto, he was the one telling me, he said, listen, if you ever work with him again, he said, you can fix that problem real easy. I'm green. I'm young. I'm going, how? He says, just let him take you in a headlock, take you over. And he said, just lay down. I said, lay down? What do you mean? He said, don't do nothing. I said, what do you mean don't do nothing? He said, are you dumb? Are you deaf? I said, let him take you over and just lay down. If he calls something, just lay there. He said, he'll start working with you. And this taught me a lesson, and it worked. We used to do Atlanta TV, I don't know, about 11 o'clock in the morning. We'd go live at, not live, but we'd do the taping at 12 or something like that. And then we would get in the car from Atlanta TV, Channel 17, and we would drive all the way to Columbus, Georgia, which is about 100 miles or so. Go straight to another TV taping that wasn't at the TV station, but they had a building set up to record TV. And we'd do, on a Saturday, we would do Atlanta TV, Columbus TV, and a house show that night. So we would wrestle 3 times on Saturday. So I got down to Columbus and I looked on the wall. The matches were posted. Guess who I had? Wrestling 2. I said, again? And I thought like maybe the Atlanta office, and they were different offices. At Columbus would just use the talent from Atlanta. That's all they wouldn't. They didn't have their own guys. So they just used Atlanta talent. So, and Mephisto, he looked at me and he said, who you got? I says, Wrestling 2. I said, all right, just remember what I told you. So I went out there. And when he went out there, all the people just went wild when they saw Wrestling 2. And then when they saw me, I got more than I thought I'd get. And like, boo, you, blah, blah. We got the ring and we lock up. And he takes me over in a headlock. And just like Mephisto, the great Mephisto told me, Frankie Kane was his name, I laid down. So you got to picture this. Wrestling 2's got the headlock on me. And the people just quieting down because, hell, there's nothing happening. There's nothing to – people just don't jump up for no reason and yell or raise their voices. Something's got to be going on. And he says, get up. Well, I didn't do nothing. I just laid there. He said, pull it again. Come on, kid. Get up. I wouldn't get up. He says, now they've been quiet for about 30 seconds now. Now he's panicking. He went, come on, kid, get up. I says, Johnny, listen. Just like that, I said, why don't we do it this way? I'll get up, but if you'll sell some of my stuff, we can have a match. But if you're going to do like you did this morning, just beat me right here. And when he heard that, he agreed to it. I got up. I punched him one time. He sold it. I swear to God, I like to cheer. I almost went, woohoo! He's doing something. And now the people got with it a little bit. So I start beating him up and getting a little steam on him. And then the people start reacting. And we do a finish, 1, 2, 3, and he beats me again. But at least I put up a fight against him. And we go back to the dressing room. And he was a real butthole in Atlanta because he didn't shake my hand. But then he came over to the side where I was. It still didn't shake my hand, but he said, "Thanks, kid," and went on. Because I think I embarrassed him. And Mephisto, I remember looking at me, and he says, "What did I tell you? He worked a little bit, didn't he?" See, the match wasn't about 4 minutes. But what he wanted to do was go out there and just beat me up for 4 minutes. Well, I wouldn't beat him, but at least make me a credible opponent, because I still got to make a living there too. If I get on TV and I'm treated just like, you know, just a regular guy down the street that gets beat in 3 minutes, what threat does that make me? So anyway, I don't think he ever liked me. I don't think he liked me before, but he damn sure didn't like me after that. And I never worked with him again.
When did the fight between Mr. Wrestling 2 and Mephisto, the great Mephisto, happen?
Not long. Well, that happened about 3 weeks later, 2 weeks later, maybe. I've told that story, right?
No, I don't think you've told that one.
What, did I tell the one?
Yes.
I've told it twice. The one I just told.
I think you told that like a year ago on like a year old podcast. Okay. But I mean, okay, we need to set it up anyway. We need to set that up to set up the fight between the two.
Macon, Georgia. We go in there. They had a nice building. And Wrestling 2, he didn't say nothing to me. He was sitting over there. I was sitting here. I wasn't against him this night. But Mephisto was against him. So I'm thinking, whoa. And I didn't know it at the time, but they had heat from a long time ago, years ago. But they never got over it. See, Mephisto used to be a pro boxer, but he was well past his prime. He was a little heavy, but he could still throw fists. He could throw hands. So they had a match, and I went out and watched it. It looked okay to me, but I went back to the dressing room. I sat down, and Johnny Walker come in first. He was kind of right across from me, but down a ways. And Mephisto dressed on the other side of the dressing room, but I could see him. In come Wrestling 2, and he's raising hell. That GD, he was cussing. What the F, blah, 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 blah. And you could hear him all over the dressing room. And Mephisto got up and he said, "What's the matter, Johnny? What's the matter?" He said, "What the fuck happened out there?" He said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "You know, when I was," he said, "No, let's go back in here." And they went through, it's the bathroom really, and they closed the door. Well, I heard a bunch of screaming and bam, back and forth. Ah, nah, nah. And then all of a sudden I heard boom, boom. Like somebody hitting the door. And the door opened about 10 seconds later, and Mephisto walked out. And he just looked at me, and he didn't, no expression or nothing on his face. He just looked at me, and the door was still closed. And then about 30 seconds later, here come Wrestling 2. And he had his mask still on. His nose was bleeding. He was cut over here. So what happened? He took Frankie back in that room. And they got into a fight, and Frankie just punched him out. So, and right then, Wrestling 2 grabbed his keys, grabbed his bag, left in his wrestling outfit with his mask on, and he was gone. And I never heard any more about it. Nothing else happened about it. So I
he didn't leave the territory. Did he just go to the next town?
No, he went home. And you know, it's not far from home. And Mephisto went home that night. So I asked him the day, I said, what the next day, what happened? He said, well, he was just upset about the match. But he's going to come in there. And he said, no, you're not going to treat me like hell. I just started yesterday. I've known him years ago. And then he told me the story where I forgot what it was now, but him and Johnny had had a run-in years ago, and apparently they never got over it, or Wrestling 2 never got over it. So that's what he got.
Do you know who, reportedly, do you know who loved Wrestling 2? It was Ole Anderson, and he loved nobody, but apparently Ole was a big Wrestling 2 fan. Was it just styles that he just liked?
Probably. But also, Johnny probably didn't treat Ole like he treated everybody else. He probably kissed up a little bit. And Ole knew he was an old-timer, and he knew him in Charlotte. He knew him a long time ago, before they even got to Atlanta. So, hey, you know who else loved wrestling too?
Cool.
It's a historical question. Mm. President Jimmy Carter. No, there's pictures of them, and they invited, this is a story now, I don't know if you've ever heard this, they wanted him to attend maybe the inauguration or some kind of a dinner in Washington, D.C.
Was this the same one that Jim Barnett was at?
What, the inauguration? I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
I think Barnett was there, but they wouldn't let him go. You know why? He refused to take the mask off. And I'm thinking, you know, I think I would have kind of took the mask off just to go, just to see what it's like. But he didn't want to reveal his identity because he's so world known. And so he didn't go.
Did you ever meet Tim Woods, Wrestling One?
I met him once or twice. Good guy. I mean, he was nothing like Johnny was. Nothing like him. Totally different personalities. Hell, Tim Wood, you could actually have a conversation with. But not with the Wrestling 2, you couldn't. Not with Johnny Walker. I couldn't, anyway. I don't think he disliked me.
It's because you're hanging around Mephisto, I guess. You'd have an out, you know, association or something like that. But
well,
we will...
that could have been a reason. Seriously.
Yeah.
Because he didn't like Mephisto. Probably saw me or heard that I was riding with Mephisto and took an instant dislike to me.
Mm-hmm. Next question, Mark from Blackburn, Lancashire. Hi, James and Dutch. I was scrolling through Facebook as I was unable to sleep and came across, he sent us a link that we can't show, especially, unfortunately, because technical limitations. But anyway, it's a promo, Smoky Mountain Wrestling, 1993. Of the Stud Stable versus the Heavenly Bodies and Arn Anderson. Now, the Stud Stable consists of Robert Fuller, Jimmy Golden, and Dutch Mantel. Can you tell us a bit more about the match that you had with the Heavenly Bodies and Arn Anderson and your time as part of the Stud Stable in Smoky Mountain, please?
Well, I don't know how it came about. Jim Cornette was booking. I guess he was looking for somebody to put with Robert and Jimmy for the Stud Stable. And the Fullers have done the Stud Stable in different iterations many times, but they were going to bring it there. So, and Jimmy just told me, he said, be really on the side of Robert and Jimmy, like I really sided with them no matter what they did. So I became like an advocate of theirs. So when they brought me in, it was a big deal that I was going to be part of the Stud Stable. So we go somewhere against the, who was it?
Heavenly Bodies and Arn Anderson.
Heavenly Bodies. That was who?
I don't know if it was the Stan Lane version, because I know it's Dr. Tom, but it's probably Stan Lane in 93, I think.
Okay.
Not Jimmy Del Rey, but don't quote me on that. It depends. Jimmy Del Rey replaced Stan Lane, I think, in 93, so I don't know.
So it was Richard, Tom, and Stan, mm-hmm. and Arn.
Mm-hmm. We'll assume Stan.
Okay. And I forgot where we were, but it was a weekend show. I remember that. Somewhere in Kentucky. Could have been anywhere. And we pushed it a couple of weeks on TV, and the TV was fairly well watched. It had a good viewership. And even going to Knoxville in that building, they ended up with some hellacious houses there. They did. And the match was okay. You know, of course, we just set it up to where, you know, Arn to get the hot tag, and then we go home. Of course, they beat me. Because I was just an announcer. I wasn't really a wrestler. I was an announcer, and we were the stuff. Of course, when I was always on commentary, I'd always say what a great guy Robert is and what a humanitarian and what a community leader, and he goes to church, and he was just Mr. Perfect. And then Jimmy was the same thing, and as you know, he teaches swimming down at the YMCA. And all this stuff made them look like just great people. And Bob Caudle will say, I never heard that. I said, well, you don't hear everything, Bob. You just hear the negative because you want to hear that. And I talk about how great they are and how I'm so proud to team with them. That's how I got with them. But those guys, Robert, and I would do interviews with them. And none of these interviews were rehearsed. They were just strictly off the top of Robert's head and Jimmy's head. And then when it come time to do mine, I just did mine off the head. I remember one thing I said, I've got kicked out of this, and this in a newspaper office and a radio station. I'd got kicked out of everywhere for something I'd done. And then I come up here, and the only people that commiserized with me was Robert and Jimmy, my good friends. But it's entertaining to listen to it. And you say, where in the hell did they come up with that? See, you can't get a writer to write that stuff. So that Robert, he would say some things once sometimes. And I said, why in the hell did he said something one time about a guy who had an illegitimate baby with this girl. And it was actually going on, I think, at the time. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I don't know. I don't want to be I don't want no heat coming back on me. But that Robert, he was too much. He really was. Great guy. But Robert could talk. He could talk. We left to go to a town one day. It's about 150 miles away. Robert got to talking. And after about 30 miles out of the town, I looked at him and I said, Robert, have you even stopped to take a breath? He just go. Now, that's entertaining as hell. It is. I don't care what he's talking about. He can make changing a tire interesting somehow. It's just the way he talks. His brother's the same way. Jimmy's kind of quiet. But that Robert, he's a talking son of a gun and entertaining. And that's what you want on long trips, is somebody who's entertaining. I don't care what they're saying. Long as it's entertaining and they're not irritating. And Robert was, he was entertaining. Irritating? No, never.
I'm trying to think where the Stud Stable was, because apparently Smoky Mountain Wrestling, because I didn't even know that they wrestled in Smoky Mountain, but I know they're in Memphis. I know they're obviously in the Fuller territory. How long were they in SMW for? Because I didn't even know that Robert Fuller appeared for Smoky.
No, they was in about a year or so.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, they's around a while. Oh, yeah. So.
Well, there's a gap in my knowledge of Exposed there. I had no idea, but yeah, I keep saying this. We need Robert Fuller on as a guest. Oh, he's like a dream guest.
You got a number
on him? Goddamn, boys, what's going on? Great.
Oh, he's great. He is. He's entertaining. I'm going to call him. Who else did I say is going to call? Somebody else.
Ghostbusters. Steve Austin. No, you did say Steve Austin at one point.
No, I did. I did say I was going to call him, but I can't get him on the phone. I did call him, but he hadn't returned the call. He hadn't returned the call. That bastard.
Who else maybe did we
I
say?
Maybe I need to stun him a good one.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'd say, Robert Fuller. I had a list somewhere, but it's on my phone and I can't access it. I think we've got time for, I don't know, a couple more. We'll see how we go. Lee Polk says, good morning, guys. Love the podcast and all your content. I've been an athlete almost my entire life. I recently finished competing in mixed martial arts and started training last year in wrestling. which I've been a huge fan of since I was little. I don't want to be a huge star or anything, but I love the storytelling part of wrestling and being able to be a character you couldn't be in everyday life. What advice would you give someone getting into the business at 40? Thank you, and continue the awesome content.
Well, I'll give you the same advice I'll give Jack Swagger. Get a job. Get a job. Hey, getting into the business at 40, unless you're in super great shape, and I, according to from what I hear, you're not interested in making money. You're just interested in being in wrestling, which is okay, as long as you don't get hurt. But what you deal with is at 40, you're not as agile or as quick as you were at 20. So sometimes you get some of those guys, they haven't wrestled either. So to get two of you in the ring at the same time, you might be asking for a little bit of a hurt to be laid on one of you. So this is an art form. This is not, it's telling a story, and it's an art form in even telling the story. And that's why some guys are just better than the others. They do the right things at the right time with the proper time interspace between it and the announcers. That gives the announcers time to pick up on it, to tell your story. And this is another bitch I got. It's about announcers. They don't really tell the story anymore. It's just, well, he takes us over to this and this and this. Oh, a big drop. Slow down.
I thought on Sting's thing. I thought Tony Schiavone was great on that. I thought Jim Ross as a commentator. These days, he's rather monotone, but he's got the gravitas. He's Jim Ross. I thought Excalibur was doing the Michael Cole thing of just being really obvious as the mass commentator. I thought he was doing the Michael Cole thing of just...
Who was this?
Saying the obvious. This is AEW, the Sting's retirement match.
The mask guy.
Yeah, Excalibur.
I think the mask guy.
He was just saying the obvious.
He's horrible. Well, not horrible. He's a good announcer. But I'm saying, he takes him over in a headlock or he throws a dropkick. Hell, I can see that. Just say something else, but I want to hear the story and what Sting has gone through, the journey he's made to get to where he is. And how long is the match? 20 minutes?
Something like that.
Okay, well, you had the first 10, the first 10 minutes to get his story in. And then that depends on what they're doing in the ring. But I don't want to hear hole for hole, move for move. I can see that.
That's what people, I think these days, people think a good commentator is somebody who knows every single name for every single maneuver. And because there are so many maneuvers and everyone's made up a name for every finisher or signature hold they've got, like in their mind, that's what a good commentator is. But like he was just, I'm trying to think of an example, but he was one saying the obvious. And then when he was trying to like disapprove of something the Young Bucks did, it seemed, I wasn't feeling the emotion from him in that sense. And I was thinking like someone like Gorilla Monsoon would have been, and some people say he was a terrible commentator. He was a fantastic commentator, full of emotion, just imitable. Would you stop Bobby and that kind of thing?
Well, I think you could kind of sympathize with Gorilla. He's out there at Bobby Heenan. And Bobby Heenan was supplying the color. The other guy needed to supply the story. And if, what's the guy's name that wears the mask? And
Excalibur.
Excalibur. I don't know. But who was his other? Oh, he had Jim Ross and
Schiavone.
Yeah. I would just have let them do it.
I would have done, because Schiavone... Jim Ross should have been the play-by-play. Schiavone should have been the color. Because Schiavone, loves... I mean, everyone loves Sting. Or most people love Sting anyway. But Schiavone loves Sting. And he was so excitable.
I don't.
I know you don't. I know.
You know why? I've never told you the reason why. I don't like Sting.
It's just going back to Memphis in the mid-80s.
Yes. He rode with me one time and didn't give me any money. And then he left. I hate that. I tried to send him letters. You owe me $12. That's what it was. And he didn't pay me.
Is that legitimate?
No.
He didn't pay you $12, Trent?
No. He skipped out on me. But no, he didn't. I just made it up. But anyway, we're like everybody else. We're like fans that look at stuff. We either like it or we don't. And but I don't. I think Excalibur, he's a good announcer, good voice, good delivery. I just don't know. I just don't much like what he delivers. But now he could have taken notes from Ross and Tony how to get it done, because they get the story across, and that's what it is eventually. A lot of people, and I said that I think a lot of people put too much, like in the Sting match, they put too much emphasis on what they did in the ring, actually. All they wanted to see is a 1-2-3, Sting get his hand raised, everybody in a good mood. And somebody, I may have said this on our Friday podcast. One guy told me, he said, isn't it traditional that the guy leaving does the losing? I said, well, yeah, traditionally, it's a different story. If you'd have had Sting lose that, they'd have rioted. And they would have been madder than hell and everybody else. I would like to have heard what Meltzer and Alvarez would have said then. If they have just a perfect match, like you said they had. And the match was good. All of a sudden, Sting loses. Oh, my God. How could you mess that up? You can't mess it up. But anyway, they did the right thing there. I'll say that.
We'll leave it on this final question. Vince Rudo has sent in a portion
Russo.
Of the Bonkers. Rudo. So I think he's a heel.
He
sent in a portion of the Bonkers World of Billy Jack Haynes in an old RF video shoot. Although I don't think it's a very old one. I think it's one of the more modern ones he did. So, do you want me to give... I mean, I could basically just say what he said because it's quite a few lines here. Or do you... I mean, you watched it. Why don't you take us through?
No. Read to me what he said.
Okay, well, first off, before he starts talking about Bruiser Brody, he just casually, off the cuff, says that Vince McMahon ordered the killing of Nancy Argentino, Jimmy Snuka's girlfriend in 1983, personally, somehow. And he also claims that he had more credit. And this is in the space of 2 minutes. He also claims, Billy did, that he had more credibility than everyone else in wrestling combined. And then he starts talking about the Iron Sheik getting the WWF belt from Backlund. He was a transitional champion, as you know. To Hulk Hogan a few weeks later, he dropped it off. But then Billy says that Bruiser Brody was going to be coming in from Japan and was going to win the WWF title from Hulk Hogan. Now, when pressed on where he heard this, Billy Jack said something to the effect of, well, it's a fact. So, yeah. I guess me is where you're getting it from. So anyway, and then he said the thought was that Vince saved his own neck from a ass whooping from Bruiser Brody for welching on this supposed deal of a WWF title by paying off Brody $50,000 in cash every year to placate him. And then he says, right after, this is a quote, right after Andy Gibb dies, as in the fourth BG who had a solo career with Shadow Dancing, Brody then gets stabbed and killed. And apparently...
What did Andy Gibb have to do with that? Just the timing?
Know. He just... Well, he wasn't even... It was the same year, but it wasn't even the same month. He just went, oh, Andy Gibb died, and then a few months later, Bruiser...
I don't get it.
Honestly, I don't get it either. Anyway, the point he's trying to make is that Brody got stabbed and killed because Vince McMahon had promised him... He was on Vince's orders because he didn't want to pay him $50,000 a year silence pay because he was going to win the WWF title or something. Anyway, your thoughts.
Well, didn't he say that the guy that he had killed him, didn't he say Carlos Colon killed him?
I don't know what he said.
He didn't even have any of the stuff right.
No.
It's just, you've heard of inane and in this case, it's insane ramblings of somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about. Now, he reminds me of some guys you can get in a car with them and they're in their own world. I mean, and you can't debate them or argue with them. They're just going to keep coming back to their same answer. And invariably, whoever that says this, if you disagree with him, he'll get mad. So now he feels that you're trying to correct him when he is right. But it sounds vintage like the guy, really. Wasn't Billy Jack? And I've said a long time ago, the guy was a little bit off and had a bad, bad temper. So the hair that he's got, didn't you tell me something about his hair?
Someone said it was a wig, some of the later Billy Jack Haynes videos. He was wearing a wig. Other people have said maybe not, but who knows? I mean, maybe glue seeped into his brain.
If he's wearing a wig, he needs to get his money back. Because that wig is the worst looking wig I've ever seen in my life.
And so, if this is real, someone needs to.
Well, my
group GoFundMe or Barber's Cut.
My relation with Billy Jack, very, very brief, very quick. And I didn't spend a long time around him because he spent most of his time in Oregon, which I refused to go. I've been invited there, but I didn't go.
We'll end on this then. Have you ever heard of why Brody never really went to the WWF? I mean, he did some appearances there, but he never had any kind of run. So why not Brody? Tailor made for Brody, it seems.
Yeah, it was. But maybe Bruno didn't want to work with him. You ever think that? The top baby faces didn't want to work with him. Brody was the king of Japan. And he was like almost unbeatable. So if they'd have got tape of Brody getting beat in New York, they could send it back to Japan, maybe a TV station, but it would shatter his image in Japan. That's where he made his money. He wouldn't do a job anywhere but that they had TV cameras because he didn't want that footage getting mad. That's why he didn't want to do any. He didn't want to go under, even in Puerto Rico. Now, I think he has, but not very much. So, and what was your question again?
I sort of follow up about Puerto Rico. Who beat him in Puerto Rico, do you remember?
It was a screwed up finish, but I think it was Carlos. Because Carlos was the only one to beat any of those guys. Because he was, Invader, he always thought he was the number one babyface. But he was behind Carlos by quite a margin. And you could tell by talking to Carlos that he wasn't anywhere, any plans anywhere for him to move up to even challenge him. So, and your best thing there is when those guys get into a tiff, just stay out of it. You have nothing to do with it. Let them settle it, which it got settled. But that was a strange universe to move around in too.
Final thing, and then we'll shut down the podcast, is would Bruiser Brody have ever made a good WWF champion, or was he just too unpredictable to sort of have that position?
I think he would have made a decent champ, but he only had one style, and that was stomp 'em, rump 'em. And it was all over he'd have got over, kind of went out in that crowd. Oh, he'd have got over like a son of a gun because he hadn't seen that. He'd have brought that Memphis style more to WWF at the time because that's what they did in West Texas, in Texas style. You can do that. But I think he would have got over. But I think what he had, just looking at it from a distance, is internal opposition. not to bring him in. They brought in Stan Hansen, right? And Brody was same style as Stan. They brought him in, but I don't think they trusted Brody for some reason. Now, the deal with him and Invader go back, I don't know, maybe 15 years. Because they brought him in one time, and the Invader was there just working preliminary matches underneath. And apparently, according to what I've heard, they had told somebody that they're looking for their next Hispanic star. And they finally decided on who was the champion there for a long time. What was it? Pedro Morales.
Yeah.
They were looking for their next Hispanic star. So he heard that. So he went out there with Brody. Well, that didn't go too well because Brody didn't give him anything. And just beat him up. So he made him look like crap in front of the office personnel and Vince. And he never forgot that. So when it come time for him to work with him, I don't know. They had had another argument before that, so it resulted in him stabbing Brody that night. I don't know. It goes into, you know, when you start talking about that, you start talking about what, who said what and who shot John and all this. I hate it happened, but it did. But it didn't happen just out of the clear blue. There was a background to it. And also Brody had said that he wanted to buy into Puerto Rico because he had the money. Because that Japan money was big for him. And he was going to buy the shares that were owned by Gorilla Monsoon. And if he'd have taken over, he sent word. He said that he was going to fire Invader. So when you threaten his job, and I'm not saying it was justified, but there was a reason for the trouble that night.
Or it was Vince McMahon who ordered the hits, according to Billy Jack Haynes on his own.
I bet it was. I bet it was. or either Gorilla Monsoon, probably. One or the other.
Right, on that one, thank you very much, everybody, for watching. Questionsfordutch@gmail.com if you want to submit your question for a future episode. And so many of you do. I'm sorry we cannot get to a quarter of them, a fifth of them, a sixth of them that you send in because we get so many involved every single week. So we thank you for that and keep sending them in. As we say, Pro Wrestling Tees, books, Dirty Dutch Mantel, 2Ls@gmail.com for your signed merchandise from the Dutchman himself. We will catch you again next Friday. And Dutch, and the hat as well.
You forgot my hat. Hey, guys, this is for sale. I only have so many. I got about six left. So, and I may reorder and I may not, but, and the diplomas selling very, very well. So, Dirty Dutch Mantel with 2Ls@gmail.com.
There you go. Thank you very much.
The people.
We the people. We the people. I need to stop the recording. I'm going to leave this in. One sec, I'm stopping it.